Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here on KLBB, Club 1220. Kyle, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
I got the Bermuda shorts and short sleeves in there. It's a balmy 38 degrees.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's about as warm as it's been in Stillwater. I could find parking today, which is always a great thing. We have a great guest today. Our guest today is Don Effenberger. And Don, welcome to Flashback Twin Cities.
Hey, Tom. Glad to be here.
This is a guest I've been trying to get on the show for, I think, months, years. And Don is a very, very busy young man, but able to get him on on Flashback Twin Cities today. Don, 40 years in journalism, and you've starting in the my alma mater, the University of St. Thomas, They called it the College of St. Thomas. Writing for the Bulletin, the Pioneer Press, 28 years, and also for MinPost.com.
Right. Started at MinPost on the day it started, 2007.
And you just recently left in March of 2014.
Right.
And MinPost, if anyone's listening does not know, is a really great collection of veteran Twin Cities writers and a roundup of news and politics and original features, too, and some great in-depth profiles on local politicians, local stories. I want to kind of start a little bit recent history and we'll go backwards. I want to talk a little bit about the inception of MinPost. Successful career at the Pioneer Press, 28 years, and you and some veteran Twin Cities journalists and managers and editors decided to start something new on this crazy internet thing to put news out there online. Tell me a little bit about that process.
Gladly. I took a buyout from the Pioneer Press in 2006, like many other journalists did. It was a time when there was this unique time when there was all this talent out on the market between the Strib and the Pioneer Press and some of the alternative weeklies. There's about a pool of 100 people out there. And Joel Kramer and his wife, Lori, were urged to start something. At one time, somebody wanted them to buy the Star Tribune, but they were wise enough not to do that. But they did put together an amazing amount of money, and that's one of the advantages MinPost has over a lot of these sites around the country that are popping up, started by journalists. Joel was the editor of the Star Tribune and then the publisher, so he knew both the news side and the business side.
Right.
And that's what's helped make us work.
No, it's the thing that I like about MinPost, and anyone can start a blog or a website in your basement or in your spare time. And the thing that I was immediately attracted to about MinPost was that you had veteran, credible reporters, those that should have been in print, long after they took buyouts. And it's a business. I mean, journalism, it's a public service, but it's also a business, and you have to make a living, and you have to do, you have to make a dollar providing it, and you have to be able to, make a dollar doing it.
Definitely.
And you had some, again, we were listening to some reporters in between Doug Groh and David Brower, Brian Lambert, people that had been in either the alternative weeklies, eventually into the mainstream papers, and then found themselves in the mid-2000s at what would have been the prime of their careers 50 years ago, looking for what the next thing is.
Right. And you had all this baby boomer talent, and now MinPost, for example, is going through a transition. Like I retired down last year, it's time for a new generation to move in, and it's doing it in an orderly way. That's what's happening now.
I think that the great thing about MinPost, and we'll kind of go backwards in there also, is you're doing original features. And right now, we were talking a little bit before the show started, there are a lot of websites out there that are we'll call scooping stories from the internet, or cutting and pasting stories, or putting on stories that actually have no factual credibility to them. And one of the concerns in the Twitter age right now is just popping a fact out there, but that's not really a fact. And a MinPost piece, you're not getting that. And the comments are, you look at the Tribune or the Pioneer Press, and people comment on them. MinPost's great thing is you have to have your real name on there. You have to own your comments. You have to be able to they're moderated to actual a dialogue. It's a great way also to be able to connect between your reading audience and your journalists.
Right. You've hit on the exact difference. Twitter, now, which most people use for breaking news, you can tell almost any breaking story in 140 characters. What you can't do, though, is give any context or tell you why it's important, and that's what MinPost tries to do on all these local stories.
We talked in the show quite a bit about the changing media, and that could be TV, radio, newspaper. And newspaper actually hit their circulation high in 2006, which People don't believe that, but that was the actual peak. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that advertising revenue was up. It just means that was the number, that was the year that the number of subscribers to print newspaper were up, and it's gone down since then.
Yeah, I can believe that.
We've been very fortunate in this town, and Minneapolis, St. Paul is, it's 14th biggest market in the country, depending on which listing you look at. We have a St. Paul paper, a Minneapolis paper. Sometimes Minneapolis paper thinks it's the paper of everyone. But we do have two papers. We have two distinct styles, two distinct voices. I hope that as we continue through here, that first of all, our paper branding survives. Glenn Taylor bought the Minneapolis Star Tribune, as they call it now. I think he's dedicated to keeping that brand alive, dedicated to keep the paper there. Will it be a form of its original self? It's yet to be found. The Pioneer Press has gone through a couple different ownerships. It's still there.
It is. It is. And we'll see how that plays out. A lot of those papers are for sale now. But again, a lot of people think don't realize what a great market this is. St. Paul and Minneapolis have the highest penetration of Sunday readership in the country. That's been true for a long time. And there's a lot of people in St. Paul who feel if the Pioneer Press were to go away, that St. Paul would become basically a Minneapolis suburb. And that worries a lot of business leaders, and they tell us that.
Well, and I think that, you know, we've done before the show started, that there's a lot of power to these brands, even if the circulation is going down. People demographics is not just 18 to 25 or 18 to 34. There's people that are age 5 and age 100 that are reading the paper. And you have to look at it from a very broad market of what the paper is.
Yeah.
And, you know, the paper, if we call it the paper, might be, you know, electronic version of it. I think that there's a lot of room to be able to create a product people want to read. You, and this is why I wanted to have you on the show today. Partly, I think that we have actually a very strong connection here on history. And you were the Pioneer Press, which was your job, but you also became the de facto historian of the Pioneer Press.
That's for sure. That was largely through attrition and longevity. But yeah, and I did several special projects that involved history.
How did that kind of come about? I mean, you came to the Pioneer Press in the late 70s as a writer, correct?
And you and reporter and editor.
Then she became an editor, and the Pioneer Press, which has a great history, and was the Pioneer Press, and then we had the St. Paul Dispatch, St. Paul Pioneer Press, right, which merged, and then the preceptor of the Pioneer Press was
James Goodhue of he did the first territorial paper, and it's a direct descendant. The Pioneer Press is a direct descendant of that paper,
the oldest paper in Minnesota.
Exactly. And there was so much history there. And one other thing going for me is journalists often hop around throughout the country with careers. I was born in St. Paul, stayed here. So I did have set connections of knowing St. Paul well. And I think that made me a natural to take on some of these projects.
And you've been to Minneapolis, right? You've been to Minneapolis before?
I have been in Minneapolis.
Okay, all right. Just...
I can't say about all my relatives, but I have.
It's funny because people, there's St. Paul people, Minneapolis people.
Right.
There's some like me who have to crisscross just to maintain a living, but there are people I know in St. Paul who've lived there. I think they know how to get to maybe the cabin in Wisconsin, but once you cross the river, it's a totally different territory to them. I think they're in New York.
For many years, my parents only went to Minneapolis for a ball game or something like that.
But you, you're editor of the Pioneer Press, and you were there during a couple of big projects. One being the history book that you were showing me a little bit before. Tell me a little bit about that book.
Sure. Well, because of the history of the paper and its longevity, we did a special history book when we introduced a new printing plant across the river from downtown. Before that, there was this mechanical annex on the corner of 4th and I think Minnesota, and it was very creaky, to overstate it. So they introduced this new spring plant and thought it was a good opportunity to do the history of the paper. Don O'Grady, a managing editor there, wrote the book. I edited and designed it. So
it's a very interesting thing, you know, the history of a company. And you think of a company like the Pioneer Press, like could be General Mills or Pillsbury or anyone else. And it's like, why do you care about the history of a company, you know? Mm-hmm. But these companies are so part of what Minnesota is that when you and tell me if I'm incorrect here, but when I do research or I find things relating to, you know, my website, tcmedianow.com, which I, you know, promote regularly in this show, you find pieces that are part of, you know, who we became, and you find these stories. We were looking at the book a little bit before, and the Crime Reporter, who was the first of the Crime Reporter we were looking at before?
Oh, Nate Bomberg, to the dust. Covered cops for 52 years from the 1920s into the early 70s. I didn't work with him directly, but the stories about him are legion. He was outside the federal courthouse, which now is Landmark Center, for anybody who knows. And he was there when J. Edgar Hoover brought in Alvin Karpis. And Alvin, Nate knew all the cops, he knew all the crooks, and Alvin said, "Hi, Nate," and J. Edgar does a double take, you know, what's going on here? And he never used a typewriter. He was your classic front page, get me rewrite guy. He'd call in the stories. The most famous one, he rarely went to the newsroom, but one Friday he did. He's carrying three little mugshots and told the city desk, "Here, you're going to need these." 3 days later, they found these three guys dead in a ravine on St. Paul. So he had a good source there somewhere.
Think of the St. Paul gangster days of the 20s. Think of the access he had access to, the things he saw.
Yeah.
And you had to really rely on good memories. There was no, he didn't have a photographer with him. You know, he was, and if he was, you know, doing, probably most things were in his mind. He wasn't writing down notes, and he wasn't doing a electronic tally like I do during the day to keep track of what I'm doing from moment to moment. And think of the trust that some of his sources had of him and didn't reveal sources. Okay. It's just such a fascinating time that we're not going to have quite the same way again.
I'll say.
With the immediate news cycle we live in right now.
He was so well respected, the cops had him train new police recruits on how to fill out reports.
I've asked, you've worked with these similar crime reporters before. I said, do you ever get disillusioned or hardened by all the crime stories, not only you cover, but you're actually right there when you see, you see a body on the ground, or you're having interviews with people that have done, you know, heinous acts, and, you know, it's a job, and you're there to serve the public and create a story or report on a story. I'm guessing that, you know, in 28 years of journalism, and you've seen every highlight, low light, middle light, you know, surprise moment, what the heck?
Yep. Well, that's one of the reasons you hear often about gallows humor in newsrooms, where, as a sense of relief, some of the humor and jokes told there are not what you really want to do in polite society, as a release from that kind of tension.
When you were doing the history on the Pioneer Press, what was the most surprising thing you found? And I'm guessing you, like me, you probably thought you had a pretty good handle of what went on in your, you know, at the paper or even in the cities. What surprised you when you were going through that?
Well, I think the best part is hearing all these anecdotes of things you don't know what you don't know type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hear all these great stories from folks. I remember when you heard the most elaborate practical joke anybody played, and that they had to have some free time, I guess, because this took 6 weeks to play out. But there was a photo editor named Curly Vogt, called Curly, of course, because he was bald. And one of the reporters decided to convince him that he was growing at age 60. So they had a photo lab with one of those strings pulling down for the light switch, all of it. They started lengthening this light switch, so he thought he was getting taller. Then they put paper in his hat band to make his hat tighter. And sure enough, he thought he was getting taller, and then they started reversing it, shortening it, taking the stuff out again. They had the guy going nuts over about a 6 week period.
A little torment won't hurt anyone, right?
But all these weird stories, it was great to put down. I was going to say, what made the history, the Pioneer Press history book, different than other history books, is the title, History at Your Doorstep. Every day this showed up on people's homes,
right?
And all these stories actually impacted your daily life.
And sometimes twice a day. And you get the morning edition, the afternoon edition.
We did.
You know, people who listen to this show, I'm sure remember that you actually had a morning paper and afternoon paper. It's amazing to think about what has changed, just the way we work on people don't get home before 5 o'clock anymore. Right. People get home. They have it's two income households with three kids with 17 different activities after school and daycare, and people get home about 7 o'clock now. I've heard suggested before, if local news really wanted to, you know, get their product out there, have it at 7 p.m., not at 5:30 p.m. Uh-huh. And the same thing with the paper. The paper used to come about 5 in the afternoon for that second edition. You didn't have an internet that you were even dialing up into to get that last, you know, the last news of the day. That was what you had besides sure. some TV news and maybe the radio news. Yeah. It's a different world, isn't yeah. it?
Long-timers may remember that for a long time, the p.m. was the dominant paper. You have to remember in St. Paul, particularly places like Whirlpool, people got off work at 3:30 shifts, mm-hmm. and they did come home and they read the paper, and that slowly changed. Mm-hmm. And then Pioneer, the morning paper, became the dominant one, and then they merged them.
And for a while, I recall the old orange boxes, and you remember that you still see these orange boxes oh, yeah. out in neighbors in St. Paul. And one side of the orange box was, this is kind of where my memory starts. Okay, the one side was the Pioneer Press, and the other side was the Pioneer Dispatch.
Dispatch. Yeah.
And those two papers merged, and then it was the St. Paul Pioneer Press yes, Dispatch for a long time.
Yes. And then they slowly did away with the shortened title.
Was that a controversial decision? Because the Dispatch was a long-time brand yes. name of this community.
People who work there now will tell you they still have people call and said, I took the Dispatch, or this the Dispatch. They still think of it that way.
You're going to get some 25-year-old engine on the phone that has no idea what anyone's talking
that's
about.
That's so true. It's so true.
Our guest today is Don Effenberg Donzi, veteran news journalist of both online and print, and wrote a couple of great books. And so the first book, now, can you find this book still at, can you find it online, or can you find
that's
it at...
That's a good question. Okay. I've never looked.
Okay. Well, I might be looking...
For a while, the History Center had some.
Okay.
But...
The process of doing a book like that, and one thing that I've found even doing the show here is people have stories, but you have to ask them. And people are actually more forthcoming with stories which you wouldn't expect them to want to tell you, but if you ask them, they'll gladly tell you.
Oh, I'll say. A classic Minnesota story, and long-timers will relate this too. We hired a reporter from AP in California. And second day on the job, we sent him to a reunion of six ex-Minnesota governors.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back shaking his head, all befuddled. He said, there were three Andersons there. There were three Elmers there. And there were two Elmer Andersons. What kind of state is this? It's, you know, it's just amazing, Lee, Minnesota.
That about says Minnesota right there, doesn't it? And... The thing is, and the reason why it was, and again, people that are a certain age will understand that, two-year governorships of
yeah.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
You had 2 years as governor, and you had a lot more chances of a long-term governor, or actually short-term governors, which were building up for a while. We had a lot of elections where it was Republican, then Democrat, Republican, yeah. or it was the former Labor Party, and eventually in the 70s and 80s, it was pretty much all Democrat. Yeah. But
and Anderson's still a popular name. Look how close Sharon Anderson came to being elected.
Well, in that story, if anyone doesn't know that, it's not the Co-host Good Company. That
no,
Sharon
exactly.
Anderson is a, and she might Gaslight. Be listening. She might be listening.
Yeah.
So, hi, Sharon. Sharon is a. I have lots of video on Sharon, some which I can't put onto the website because I want to keep my website up. But when Sharon Anderson ran for, which is, I think she's ran for all three parties. I think, but I think she ran for Attorney General in 1998 and or it was 94 maybe 1994. And she won the primary for the Republicans,
right.
I think, because people thought it was the cute blonde Sharon Anderson
yeah,
from Good Company.
Yeah.
No, it was Sharon Anderson, who we could call her a community activist. That's a
let's
nice
say
way
to say gadfly.
Yeah, we'll call her that.
Yeah. Okay.
But she became quite close to winning elections. I think with the name Anderson, you're going to get at least 20%
yeah.
of the vote, no matter what.
I track records there.
No Anderson causes trouble, right? So you wrote the book, and then you were
well, I edited it.
I'm sorry, you were edited. And then you primarily were an editor for the latter part of your career, correct?
Right, right. And covered lots of different topics, health and education, religion, and then St. Paul news.
What was your favorite part of the 28 years of the Pioneer Press? If you had to go back and do one of them again, which one would you do?
Yeah, I think it'd be 1999, which was the 150th anniversary of paper, and we did a bunch of special projects for that. We produced a 64-page broadsheet special section, which is unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
It was so big it ran to four sections and dealt with the history. It was also the anniversary, 150th anniversary of the territory, Minnesota, mm-hmm. and 150th anniversary of the city of St. Paul. So St. Paul found some weasel system. They had like 450th anniversaries, well, being a village and incorporating.
And by the way, and the one thing that St. Paul did that Minneapolis did not do, and I don't mean to pick on our friends in Minneapolis because I'm sure a lot of them are listening to my show, but St. Paul kept their buildings, and Minneapolis, in some of their forward-thinking, the buildings which might have been historically relevant outside of City Hall and outside of a couple buildings were leveled. To put up skyscrapers and warehouses. Mm-hmm. St. Paul kept a lot of the churches, the Ham Building, the old Pioneer Press Building, which was there for a long time, mm-hmm. the Union Depot, which is now a great center of transit now in the Twin Cities, kept their buildings.
And Landmark Center.
Landmark Center.
Came very close to hitting the wrecking ball.
St. Paul Bug Club. That also has many different lives.
Yeah.
And I think it's on its about fourth ownership now. I remember when... they were auctioning off the contents of the St. Paul Athletic Club. I think someone had, I can't remember who it was, that bought it, and they thought they were going to make it into a hotel, or it was going to be some kind of...
John Rupp, maybe?
That thing might have been it, but it didn't pan out, but somehow, some buildings have many different lives.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Our sports teams have many different lives. They just don't really succeed. Kyle, let's take a break. We'll come back with Don Effenberger. I want to talk more about some of the great projects you did, including the Minnesota 150, because there's some names on there I want to talk about. I want to talk about the judging process.
Okay.
See if you remember some of these names, then more about yourself on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220.
This is Grant from the Tavern on Grand. They say if you're going to serve walleye to Minnesotans, it's got to be good. That's why the Tavern on Grand is sometimes called Minnesota State Restaurant. We serve Minnesota State fish, the walleye. Tavern on Grand in St. Paul is made an art form out of walleye. Delicious, tender, flaky walleye that's offered in a variety of ways. Any way you order your walleye at the Tavern on Grand, it's guaranteed to be great. See for yourself why folks come back time and time again for the walleye and all the other tasty treats. For the Tavern on Grand, St. Paul at 656 Grand Avenue, just half a block west of Dale Street.
I Love Lucy, live on stage. Come be a part of a live studio audience and witness firsthand the side-splitting antics of America's favorite foursome, live and in color for the very first time. TV Guide calls it the most entertaining production seen in years. Don't miss Lucy, Ricky, Fred, Ethel, and the hilarious cast of I Love Lucy, live on stage.
This is Tom from TimelyExpressions.com in Badness Heights. I'd like to talk to business owners. You know you have a great team of people working for you, making your company shine. How about showing how much you appreciate them when you hear they are growing their family with a customized embroidered blanket for the new baby? The gift will last a lifetime and they will know how much you care. Call me at 612-414-3674 or contact me at timelyexpressions.com.
Find out why more people come here to River Valley Ford.
Day or night, year round, rivervalleyford.com is open for business. Visit us online and see our selection of new and quality pre-owned Ford vehicles. Ask questions, schedule a service appointment, and see our online specials at rivervalleyford.com. River Valley Ford, just north of I-94 in Baldwin. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and neighbors choose River Valley Ford in Baldwin.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Oslin with our guest Don Effenberger. Okay, Don, you can tell the story you're just telling me now about Bill Dial being a film critic in 1948 because...
Oh, yes. Bill Dial's longtime entertainment reporter here and a popular DJ name people remember from DGY. He was the film critic back in 1948, and so he reviewed the big Laurence Olivier powerful Hamlet portrayal and ran the review, and the next day the phone rings. There's a young caller all upset with him, wondering why he gave away the ending and that Hamlet had died. So you never know. It was one of a few times I bet that Bill was temporarily speechless.
I guess the informed public thing has always been a case of matter of 1948 or 2014. I there's a little rumor going around that there were some people that were upset about the ending of Lincoln that they didn't know. Well, what can I tell you? There's some tragic endings and some tales. I want to pull this out here. This was from June of 2000, and this is the product you worked on. You edited this. This is the 150 most memorable Minnesotans, the top
influential
Minnesotans.
Yeah.
And the judges range from Karen Burrows. I saw she was my professor at St. Thomas. John Brandel, a former state senator. Kwame McDonald, he was part of the St. Paul Public Schools. A lot of great broad range of judges. I just want to pull some of these names here because I was looking at this before the show started. And the fictional characters were my favorite, I think. Betty Crocker, Jolly the Green Giant, Mary Richards, and Snoopy. Sidebar, we were telling a story about a character called Sparky that the Planet Press had hired a cartoonist to draw a cartoon named Sparky.
Well, knowing the Pioneer Press, they didn't hire him. He worked for free.
Okay.
And he came in, a young guy named Sparky, and wanted to do a Sunday comic. So they let him do it for 3 months or so, and then Sparky decided he'd like to get paid. And the editor thought and decided not to take him up on that. So.
And we have to assume he wasn't demanding a high salary. He's probably demanding a little bit of money just to be able to live, we assume.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so it turns out that 6 months later, the guy landed a national syndication deal, went on to be called, he was better known as Charles Schulz, and he got Peanuts going. So, and the irony of all that is with the syndication deals, the way they worked it, their papers had exclusivity. They sold it to the Minneapolis Tribune. And so the St. Paul hometown boy never got his strip in the Pioneer Press or Dispatch.
Never got to, there's some wise business decisions there. Every company will have one of those once in a while. But Charles M. Schulz, 1922 to 2000, St. Paul cartoonist who created the most beloved and marketed comic of all time with his Peanuts gang. Hubert Humphrey, his funeral was 37 years ago today, yesterday, okay? And I actually have the funeral coverage from Channel 4 on tcmedianow.com if anyone wants to look at that.
I wonder if he was the last guy to lie in state at the Capitol.
I think from Minnesota would have to be. Not
the Minnesota Capitol.
Yeah, none come to mind. We've had a couple senators pass since then, but I think that he would have been, he would have been our last most prominent national politician to come out of Minnesota, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've had another VP or another cabinet member since then. Mondale, but he's still with us. So, look at some more names here. Kevin McHale and Bancroft. There's a. How did you come up with this list of people? Was this did people nominate people, or was this
We started with over around 400 names. Some from staffers. We asked the public to weigh in. We asked the 9 expert judges to weigh in. And then we culled it. We tried to organize in a way that we didn't end up with 140 white politicians. So we did it by categories, legends and leaders and arts and economic, social change.
I'm still counting Andersons, Eugene Anderson, Elmer L. Anderson, James J. Hill, the Dayton family, George Hormel. There's names that become brand, you know, these brands become named. You forget there actually was a guy that was George Hormel who created that dynasty down in Austin. I see Judy Garland, which people don't know, that's from Minnesota.
Right.
And someday they'll find her shoes. Someday that are missing
the
from the
missing ones. Yeah.
Paul Bunyan. I'm not sure, Kyle, have you ever seen the big Paul Bunyan statue up in Brainerd?
Didn't they move that?
There's one in Brainerd and one in Bemidji.
Okay.
But
and do they still talk?
I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
But you think of Betty Crocker and the impact she's had.
I think...
Yeah, that's an imaginary person.
I think General Mills still gets calls to ask for to speak to Betty Crocker, some consulting on some baking advice.
Yep.
This had been a fun project to do, and I'm guessing that, looking at all these stories, it was supposed to be a tough decision to get narrowed down to 150.
Oh, for sure. We went through several rounds of voting. It took 8 months to do it all because you had to hone the list down and then send it back out and have people re-vote.
Hoping not offending anyone. I'm sure people were offended, but it's just the way it goes sometimes. But this was in June 2000, the most 150 influential Minnesotans with a, you know, judged by a very, we'll call it, diverse panel of judges. So you worked on another product you were showing me. This was the 150, the paper's 150th anniversary, and this came in a big package that in April of 1999. Tell me a little bit about that.
That was the 64-page section I was talking about. We organized it around four themes: one, the history of the area; one, the people of the times; one, characters at the paper; and one, important stories that we thought people would remember.
You had some good ownership that was supporting you in these projects, and that's one thing that you need. You need to have good people with the money, you know, the money, need to be able to support these projects. And at that time, the papers were not as in danger as they might, you know, one can make the argument they are now.
Right.
You had some good support to get those products out there.
For sure. Many people know the name Ritter in St. Paul, and the same thing was going on in Minneapolis with the Coles family.
Mm-hmm.
You had two big families that supported the community and were well known. Then times changed and they went corporate, and it's been different since.
Yeah, you can really tell the difference in local ownership. And the Cowles, and by the way, if you don't know the Cowles family, they have, that's the Cowles Center of the Arts. That's the last, that's the only thing I can think of Minneapolis with their name is on it. And the Ritter family. People may remember the Parr Ritter tale.
They may.
I'm not sure if we can talk about that a little bit, but you might recall a few years ago when Knight Ritter purchased. So let me get my history here. So Star Tribune, the Cowles sold to
McClatchy.
Mm-hmm. McClatchy then sold to Knight Ritter. Was that
total? No, I think they went to Vista Capital.
Capital, which then I think
Venture
got...
Venture Capital,
Then I think they bought Knight Ritter, or Knight Ritter merged with them. I can't remember how that happened.
Yeah, I think somehow McClatchy got Knight Ritter.
But somehow...
And then they traded off to Media News.
Somehow Parr Ritter ended up the Star Tribune for a very, very brief period of time, and that was a very controversial move, and I don't think Parr's in Minnesota.
Last I heard, he was in Chicago.
That's what I heard, too, but the problems that can happen. And
I was going to say Ritter's name is around town, the family name on the Ritter Arena and the U of M, the hockey arena, and there's a street, Ritter Circle, downtown St. Paul.
And were they local, the Ritters?
Eventually, yeah. I'm trying to remember now where they started out, but many of them were here.
Because they own papers not only here in Minneapolis-St. Paul, but also in other parts of the
they
country.
They did, and then when they merged with Knight to become Knight Ritter, then they had papers all over the place.
But this, good paper, good stewardship of the paper, and it's something that hopefully
definitely.
That is the, again, the Planner Press... some changes in the economics. The printing now is done at the Star Tribune.
Yes,
Planner Press is now printed at the Star Tribune, which I'm sure that many good newspaper men are rolling in their graves knowing that their paper is being printed in Minneapolis.
But think about the economics. Minneapolis needed it as much as the Pioneer Press did. They had excess press capacity, which they're now using, and Pioneer Press obviously can cut costs somehow that way.
I can only hope that we have both papers survive. I know that, again, people on this side of the river, it's oftentimes the orange box.
Yeah. I believe it's New Orleans now, which is the largest city in America without a daily printed paper.
Interesting.
And them or Detroit. And you wonder if that's the next step to going to three or four things in both cities. But time will tell.
Since the beginning of new medias, the silent movie was going to be threatened by the talkies, and TV was going to kill the movies. Somehow these mediums have survived.
Oh.
And, you know, no matter, and I'm pretty digitally connected, but I still like to hold a book. I still like to be able to, you know, highlight things occasionally.
Well,
and maybe that's going to change at some point. But
Sunday newspaper, imagine reading that on a computer. Here with the newspaper, you split up, you have sports and this. One of the more depressing things, and I think it's true at every paper in the country, when you looked at a Sunday paper, the newsroom was always depressed to learn that the most popular things were the Target ad, the classifieds back then, the TV book, the comics, Sunday comics. that by the time you got to the news, you were pretty well down the line.
You know, when and one of those things are missing the paper, I'm guessing those get the most phone calls.
Crossword puzzle.
Take away the content.
If
your target ad or TV weekly isn't in the paper, I mean, heck or high water, there's some phone calls.
For sure.
Taking us back a moment, and I like to look at the past, but I also like to understand that the future is not all doom for media, because I think that the way information is being gathered right now, we had a great opportunity to be able to get a lot of information out there to have a very informed public, and we're a smart news public. I mean, you wouldn't be able to sustain 28 years of the Pioneer Press or MinnPost, wouldn't be able to survive in this community if we didn't have a very educated and news-conscious community. I think that this is going to, these things are going to survive, and I think that they need to coexist together.
Right.
The MinnPost and the Pioneer Press Tribune, as rivals as they are, they need to be able to understand what they are good at and how they complement
themselves. Exactly. The best explanation I've heard is actually Joel Kramer lays this out so well. And he describes what MinnPost and the papers do as a community good. It's not a commodity. Mm-hmm. It's something that you need for a democracy to flourish. And I believe that, and I always have.
Well, and you also get some, some in-depth, the Tribune used to do something called, the Sunday magazine, and it was called, I can't remember the name of it was called, but you know what I'm talking about. They used to
do
kind of supplement, and it used to be some, it'd be like 10-page stories they would do, and it'd be people in town or different events. That's kind of like where I see MinnPost, when you see a big profile on John Fraser or Walter Mondale or, take your pick of your politician or newsmaker. They're doing stories that are not the voices that you don't hear every day. And the Tribune and Pioneer Press are doing a little bit of that in their blogs and their online material, but I think that there's still a lot of room for stories to be told.
Definitely. And the key, I think, is a mix. You can't have all long stories. You can't have all short stories. But you can have unique stories, and there are many of those to tell. And explainers. Things come and go so fast.
And we do have short attention spans. We do have, we have a generation that's coming up here that can't be off their phones for more than 5 minutes. And it's, to me, I wonder, can someone, and I challenge myself sometimes because, during the day, and I get a lot of different, I'm on Twitter, I'm on these things, I get all this stuff, and I'm cutting and pasting. Can I sit down and read a story for 10 minutes? Because sometimes you read the first few paragraphs and you think, all right, I got the gist of it. Move on to the next one.
Well, that's so true. With a hard news story, it's often one or two new facts and then 16 inches of background.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been following it, you don't need the 16 inches of background.
Right.
But many people do. So online works that way, where you don't fill up the internet the way you would a newspaper page.
Tell me a little bit about something I find fascinating, and you see this in old movies. You walk into a newsroom, and I picture the cloud of smoke from the cigarettes, the sound of the manual typewriter, not the word processor. I'm talking about the old manual typewriter that if you made an error, you had to white it out, or you had to go back in space and do an X on it. That's a noise, and it's probably ingrained in your mind. But the scent, the smell, the look, the feel of those old newsrooms.
The classic example now is in the old days. Classrooms would love to come and walk through a newsroom and see it working.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like walking into an insurance office.
That's right.
People are
cubes, and
there's no noise other than somebody on the phone. And
no one
it's
comes
a very
in.
Different experience, and it's not very sexy to come in and have a tour for half an hour.
No one yells in, stop the presses, and everyone stops what they're doing. I picture the fedora hat, the tie kind of half, and short sleeves rolled up, typing out a big tale from today's boxing match. But
one of my favorite old movies is Ace in the Hole, Billy Wilder's movie with Carl Douglas as the quintessential guy you're talking about, hard living, hard talking, and they would do anything for a story. Hopefully that's not true everywhere.
There's a few of those guys left in the country. I mean, there's some columnists, and we'll keep them nameless. They're in their 90s. They've been around for a while. both in here in Chicago and other cities, there's a few of them around, but it's a bygone era, and you kind of appreciate that look and feel. Gone away of the newsboy on the corner, yelling extra and selling papers for a dime.
For sure.
So tell us a little bit about what's next for you. You are officially retired, but you're still working on some projects, though, correct?
Well, yeah. One interesting thing I just started working with is this group that wants to bring the World's Fair to Minnesota in 2023, and people say, there's still World's Fairs?
That's my first.
They've now been renamed Expos, but the concept's the same. And they hold big ones in years of 0 and 5, like the next big one's 2015. It'll be in Milan, Italy. And then in between the two big ones, there's a small one, or a 3-month version rather than a 6-month. And there's a group led by former Secretary of State Mark Rucci, who wants to bring the fair here in 2023. That's 8 years out, which sounds like a lifetime until you think of how much planning goes into it. But when you think back 8 years and how the world has changed and try to imagine what it would be like then, it's just amazing. There were no smartphones, mm-hmm. no Twitter. I have Facebook maybe. Just getting started. But the world has changed so fast, and there's reason to think it'll keep changing even faster. I was mentioning that 3D printing is so big right now. But now there's also a move toward 4D printing, mm-hmm. which would incorporate time, where the thing you print out changes over time. Like if you add water to it, it expands or changes shape. So it's just every time you think you've heard it all, something new comes.
So we're not too far away from moving our brains to a different body, right? And expanding another 100 years.
Oh, I'd like that if I could get a different body.
Yeah, me too. So tell me, what is a modern-day World's Fair? When I think of World's Fair, I think of New York 1939, where they unveiled the first TV camera ever invented. What is a World's Fair today?
Well, I bet innovation and new technology would be a big part of it. One theme we're looking at is health, mm-hmm. both health for people and health for the planet. So, and Minnesota, again, is a natural leader in so much of that with Medtronic and St. Jude's and all of that. Next year's theme is food and feeding the world. Mm-hmm. And Minnesota will have a big presence there when you think of Cargill and Pillsbury and General Mills. So,
very interesting.
Minnesota's just poised on all these hot topics.
And the World's Fair is going to be in Milan, Italy next year, correct?
Right.
Okay, so you can. So anyone here who wants to go to the World's Fair, they have to go to Milan for. And I'm right.
I can think
you.
Of worse places.
Oh,
to go.
I've ever been to Milan, Italy?
I have not.
It's actually a very nice place. Yeah. It's to be honest, I think it's very urban. So I can't imagine where they would stick the World's Fair into here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We have so many open spaces. We just put into our state fairgrounds probably for a little while.
Yeah.
But
that's one actually that they can't use because of the commitments they have there.
But that sounds very, very, very interesting. So you're not really retired. Do you ever see yourself just retiring and never touching the stuff again ever? After 40 years, never being able to.
I don't think that far ahead.
Well, best of luck to that project. We have, we were talking a little bit before the show started. In the next few years, we're going to have a Super Bowl here. We've had an All-Star game here. We've had some pretty big world events here in this little flyover land here, and we've done some great selling. We have some great salespeople here, some great business leaders who've told us, yes, bring a Super Bowl to a place where it might be 30 below with wind chill in the middle of winter. Yeah. Don't do it in Miami. Do it in Minnesota. And somehow we've gotten people to do that.
Yeah. My favorite flyover story, and something most people don't stop to think about, is from 1932 to 1984, Minnesota had somebody in presidential politics every year. Almost everybody knows Hubert and Walter Mondale and Gene McCarthy, all those. But we also were home to Gus Hall, mm-hmm. who was the Communist Party national president, and he was from Minnesota. And Harold Stassen ran from 32.
I would say he ran until about 2000,
well,
I think.
But think about that. For mm-hmm. a flyover land mm-hmm. or a state in the middle of the country to have that kind of national impact is really quite amazing.
You know, we elected some governors, which got some national attention. We elected some senators that had some national attention. We're one thing you can see about Minnesota. We are not. It's not Nebraska. We are not predictable. There's nothing simple and mundane about our lives. Even though sometimes, even movies like Fargo, I think sometimes simplify a little bit about what we are here. And it's not the case. We have a vibrant. Restaurant scene, we have a vibrant entertainment scene, and we have some good people that are selling that.
Yeah. Talk about counterintuitive. A lot of people don't remember that Prohibition started with a Minnesotan, too, Andrew Volstead. So right down at Landmark Center, there he was bringing dry in times too.
And so far, his Sunday prohibition is still, still intact here, which might be ending. Should we do one more commercial break? Take a quick break, and we'll come back with some final thoughts. Don Effenberger, he's a 40-year Twin Cities veteran journalist, and I want to talk about some more of his projects at the Pioneer Press and Men Post. We'll come back here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
As their menu says, life is uncertain. Best to eat dessert first. At Sail Away Cafe, their desserts are so unbelievably delicious, you'll want to start with dessert. Gooey butter cake, chocolate ganache cake, homemade cheesecake, or key lime pie, to name a few favorites. But save room for some delicious homemade soup, homemade pizza, or dinner of pasta Adriatica. You'll be glad you did. Sail Away Cafe is fine dining with a hometown feel. So gather up your friends and meet at the Sail Away Cafe in Afton for dessert, breakfast, lunch, dinner, or live music on the weekends. Destination, Sail Away Cafe. And Afton.
Is your car living on borrowed time? Most of us overlook some of the most important regular services until it's too late.
This is Andy Lundstedt, owner of Certified Transmission and Total Car Care. For over a dozen years in Stillwater, we have built our reputation on exceptional customer service. That's why we can say Certified Transmission and Total Car Care, where our customers send their friends.
Schedule an appointment at 651-275-9055.
Club 1220 KLBB presents the Community Calendar. The Washington County Historical Society is holding their annual old-fashioned ice cream social. It's this afternoon until 4 at Mulberry Point on the St. Croix Riverfront in downtown Stillwater. Volunteers are needed to help the St. Croix County Home Delivered Meals Program in the Hudson area. If you would like to help, you can contact the Hudson Senior Center or call 715-381-4364. The musical Pump Boys and Dinettes is being held today at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson, with shows at 3 and 7:30. For tickets, visit thephipps.org. The drama The 39 Steps is on stage this weekend at the Lakeshore Players Theater in White Bear Lake. Visit lakeshoreplayers.com for tickets. If you have an item for KLBB's community calendar, you can send it to me, Jeff, at klbbradio.com.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with Don Effenberger. And Don, before I wanted to give you time to talk about Don Boxmeyer, a good, fantastic writer, former from the Pioneer Press, but I'm looking at the media people, because this is a media show.
Yep.
This is people that were runners-up to the 150 most influential. You get Bill Deal here, Kellen Card, Boone and Erickson, Thomas Friedman, John Gallus, you might know, I don't know his name, but you know his voice. George Grimm, globe-trotting newspaper columnist, the Minneapolis newspapers, and founder of the annual Santa Anonymous toy drive. Did not know that.
Right.
Bill Hillsman, influential ad man. Wellstone really owes a lot of his campaign to Bill Hillsman. And Jesse Ventura owes
The thinker.
That commercial worked.
Yeah.
Lee Kamen, we just lost him this last year. Bud Kraling still with us. Vita Panikkar, longtime respected editor of the Chisholm newspaper and activist in Iron Range.
Do you remember what movie she had was shown in?
Help me.
Field of Dreams.
I did not know that.
The character who he goes to see up in the Iron Range.
So Don Boxmeyer, we were going to talk about him a little bit here.
I was just going to talk about one more of my favorite projects, and that was Lost Neighborhoods, which Don Boxmeyer wrote. Don is probably the best symbol of St. Paul journalism. He worked there for 30 years. He'd go out. He was a columnist. He'd go out anywhere in the area and come back with one or two column ideas and two or three story tips they'd give to other reporters. Everybody knew him. People would call him out of nowhere. And he's a friend of Stan Turner's, too.
He must have been a pleasure to edit for him.
When you're
reading all this great stuff, and I'm guessing it would be tough sometimes to actually have to cut down some of these stories and say, let's cut out a paragraph, because, you look at, Don Boxmeyer, and you read him pretty regularly. What a great writer, and what a great storyteller.
Don knew when to start a story, and he knew when to stop it. There wasn't much
talent.
Extra in there. No, that's for sure. At any rate, he put together over a two-year period. I worked with him as his editor about 20 years on and off, depending on where we each were in our careers. But he did a two-year project that looked at lost neighborhoods in St. Paul. And anyone who's been a long time will know, or at least have referenced these, Rondo neighborhood, which was destroyed when I-94 went in. Little Italy on the riverfront by the upper levee which flooded every time there was a big flood. And then the West Side Flats, which flooded every time there was even a little flood, were among them. And there's the Badlands, which is the area by Regents Hospital now. But there are all these stories, and Don chronicled them, talked to people who lived there at the time. It's really a living history of St. Paul that needs to be preserved. I had once urged St. Paul's school districts to use it in their classrooms, because with all the new immigrants, a real way to connect. These were all immigrant communities, as you might guess. The Italians were down Little Italy, and as they prospered, they moved up the hill.
Mm-hmm. And East St. Paul. A lot of them in East St. Paul.
Yeah.
Which,
Sweet Hollow is another one on the east side.
What part of St. Paul are you from originally? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the north end of St. Paul.
Okay.
I'm a relative rarity in terms of staying in one spot for a news career.
Well, you're near one of my favorite restaurants, Mama's over on the street. So yeah, that's one thing I find great about right now, and you know, we had enough stories, you know, the 80s and 90s of these neighborhoods that were they were ridden with crime and ridden with other problems. But you know, once we bring in people into this country, this state, that you know, they get a foothold of where they are, and they want to make something of themselves. And you know, you think about this: you come from Laos, you come from, you know, wherever you come here, like, okay, now I'm in this world of luxury, really, you know. Mm-hmm. What do I do? And I love the regentrification, especially of East St. Paul. And I you know, there's a lot of new development in that area, and a lot of new life in that neighborhood. And I'm reading a lot of stories the last few months about you know, young people, young entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. that are finding a big market out there.
And when you think of how hard hit that area was with Ham's Brewery closing and Whirlpool,
Ham's Brewery, Stroh's.
And it's fun to see it coming back.
I saw some relatives over the holidays that they're brewing beer at the Ham's Brewery again, and they were like, what? I said, well, I mean, they're not using the full building capacity, but...
Did you tell them what else they're doing there with the fish, aqua fish?
Tell me this.
That may be the extent of my knowledge, but they're doing aquaculture with...
We were recently driving on West 7th Street night, and Schmidt Beer Sign is back there.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's unfortunate that maybe they aren't brewing beer there anymore, but the big breweries, they would never be efficiently capacity. You know, besides the fact that beer drinking habits have changed, the old breweries, they would never be able to make beer efficiently or any kind of profit. It's been tried three times, the Schmidt Brewery, since it closed.
Yeah.
The old Grain Belt Brewery, but it's great to see the Schmidt sign lighting up on the river again.
I'm not sure there's any more room for new tap rooms, though. We may have tapped out.
I don't know. It seems like
every corner.
It seems like beer is the new microbrewed beer is the new thing now. And it looks like, hey, if we get some, the Surly was kind of the forerunner of that, and they were able to get our legislature to allow them to be able to sell beer and brew beer.
And that's actually a way I think they're getting in the back door on the Sunday liquor sales too.
Here's my editorial of the week. I hope we find a way to be able to do that. You know, buy a car, buy a six pack, and you know, you can buy a 70-inch TV. You can go to the casino, but you can't. You can buy a lottery ticket, but you can't buy a pack of Ham's beer or a pack of Grain Belt. It's a good Minnesota company.
Yeah, good point.
Still brewing Grain Belt in Minnesota. So Don, you got the World's Fair. You're working on some projects here. Are you missing the day to day rigors of MinPost? Are you missing being able to be down there every day?
The thing I don't miss is the drive. very hard commutes.
Well, tell you what. How about you come down and drive here to the studio again, and we'll have you on again and talk about more about your projects. And I really love hearing about your past. And we didn't get to the St. Thomas days, and we have to do that again next time.
Yeah.
This is Flashback Twin Cities. My guest is Don Effenberger. Thanks, Don. We'll be back next Saturday here on KLBB Club 1220.